I am Plante on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We continue meeting and chatting with notable media personalities in this part of the world. Joe Leary joins me now. Whether it's his years on television or for various publications in British Columbia and beyond or on the radio, Mr. Leary remains an ever-present personality in the community. He hosts Just Here for the Beer monthly on TSN Radio, 1410 AM here in Vancouver, every last Saturday at noon. You can read him in the 24 Hours newspaper. He's also in show business, and perhaps he'll tell us about his endeavors there. I first saw Joe doing the weekend weather on Channel 13 over the years, whether it was UTV, CKVU, Global, or City TV. He's worked in broadcasting at various stations in the city, hosting morning and afternoon drive programs. He also penned the must-read air traffic column that appeared in The Province for 7 years, a decade or so ago. I'll get Joe to reflect on the state of broadcasting today, and we'll look back at the influences, the colleagues, past and present, and more. The Twitter handle is at Really Joe Leary. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program in studio, as it were, Joe Leary. Mr. Leary, good morning.
Thank you, Joseph. Pleasure to talk to you.
As I told you as you came in here, it's a real pleasure to meet you because you're someone that I've watched on television over the years. When you walk around the streets of this town, do people recognize you?
Yeah, they do. I mean, more so when I was on TV on a regular basis, because it was pretty hard to sort of blend in. The funny thing about being recognized, though, is, and this anybody that has been recognized would probably attest to this, you claim to not want it, but when it benefits you, you love it and you cherish it. And I found that when I was doing weather on a regular basis, I did weather for 13 years on Channel 13, mm-hmm. ironically. And I found that when I was doing that, like after a newscast, so I'd go to a restaurant or something like that, there would be the channel that was on, and the person serving would go, oh, yeah, I just saw you. The treatment you get, the preferential treatment, is actually kind of nice. Anybody that denies that, I think, is misleading themselves.
So before you went into television, you had been in radio for a number of years, right?
Yeah.
And what I found interesting about reading up on you is that radio for you was always the goal. Even as a kid?
As a kid.
Yeah. And so who did you listen to growing up that sort of planted the seed, say?
Well, I'll tell you what. I grew up with in a house with two older sisters that were really into the British invasion. So when all these hair bands from Britain crossed the pond, and my sisters were the screaming, giggly girls that were loving them. So that was what I heard in the house. So I heard CKLG and C-Fun at the time, and I heard the DJs playing the Beatles and the Stones and the Kinks and the Who and all of these cool bands. And more enchanted I was with the guys spinning the records than the guys singing on them. Like, when I would look at bands, I'd think, yeah, that's great. I want to be the guy playing them. So that's all I was ever in my scope, was to be on the radio, and I specifically wanted to be a screaming top 40 disc jockey. I didn't want to be a news guy. I didn't want to be a country artist. I didn't want to be anything like that. I wanted to play top 40 records.
And the influences that you had, say, growing up, or the people that you liked growing up, these people that you loved listening to, that you wanted to be, essentially. Do they remain influences throughout your career?
I would say definitely, yeah. And it was really cool. I mean, people like Fred Latrimo, Terry David Mulligan, the real Roy Hennessy, Daryl B., the people that, you know, were the guys when I was growing up, impressionable as I was listening to, it was nice to get to meet them along the way and work with them. In all those cases, I got to work with these people. And I will say this, that to me, Fred Latrimo remains the ultimate broadcaster. He's the kind of person that literally can turn on a microphone and be brilliant. And I don't know how much preparation goes into it as he's driving to the studio or whatever, but he was the consummate entertainer. And to actually work with Fred, become friends with Fred, we're still Facebook friends, that was something that meant more to me than, you know, anybody take your greatest hero and actually get a chance to work with them, work alongside them. And I remember one night I was working on C-Fun, and it was a Saturday evening, and I was doing a show called Saturday Night Graffiti, and it was in the studio alone, and it was 6 hours of oldies music, and it was kind of tedious, and the private line rings, about 8:15, private line rings, and I answer it, and it was Fred. Fred and Kathy were out for dinner, driving around listening, and Fred goes, hey, you're sounding good. Cheers, man. Yeah. And hung up the phone.
Wow.
And I went, you know, okay, he didn't need to do that, and I don't even know if he intended to make the call initially, but he did, and the fact of the matter is, whether I was sounding good or horrible, the fact that Fred took out a moment of his time just to give me a little pat on the back, that was huge.
And so for you, he was the best in this market.
Absolutely. To me, yes.
Yeah. I'm of an age that only recognizes him from the commercials right. that used to right. run for the radio station, whatever station he was on at the time, and he was such a presence in this community, wasn't he, when he was on there?
He was, and let me just say that Fred, the final broadcast that Fred did in this market, people might have thought, ah, oh, Fred and Kathy, kind of, you know, it doesn't sound like it used to. No, 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 they sounded like they always did. It was the radio stations that didn't sound as good anymore.
Yeah.
And I think Fred Latrimo to this day, I mean, he's, you know, happily retired and enjoying life in a couple of areas, but I think if Fred was to go back on the radio today, I think he would be just as brilliant as he always was.
So what do you think that is where broadcasting talent comes from? Is that something one's born with or something that say they develop over the years? I mean, I watch you on television,
right.
or I used to read you in print, or I still read you in the 24 hours, I guess. There's something there that for you. Did you cultivate that over the years, or is that something that you always had, say, as a kid, listening to these guys, and it just comes through the airwaves?
I think, to be honest with you, Joe, because of the fact that I was so influenced early on by radio, I think that it probably, I patterned myself after listening to people that I admired, and as a result, in school, English I excelled in. I was great in the communication skills. I basically sucked at everything else,
yeah.
and there was no other leaning in life. So for me, I think perhaps I began to communicate better and better, and I patterned myself after listening to radio DJs. So I think perhaps that's kind of how you hone your skills, and I think if you zero in on a few good ones, because not everybody on the dial was mm-hmm. as great as the few that I've mentioned, but I think when you listen to the people that you admire, you start to try and liken yourself to them. I'm not going to say imitate them because that's not realistic. I'm not going to say try and sound as good as because that's not realistic, but I think that you can gain inspiration from and try and find yourself within what you use as a role model and try and carve out a nice little sound for yourself from that point.
So when we read online about the radio business today, and,
yeah.
and you know, I tend to think that you were a pioneer in this because you had the air traffic column
yes.
in the province, which I loved reading, by the
Thank
way,
you.
And I think a lot of people did as well, because it was a great insight into radio. Just as you thought radio was dying,
right.
that here was someone covering it, and there was great enthusiasm for it and about it. Now there are message boards online and the sort. And there seems to be a lot of traffic there reading that stuff and a lot of comments. Is that accurate to say that there are people still interested in radio and the business, say, of it?
I would think so. I think certainly in specialized fields of radio, I like, for example, I'm disinterested in most radio today, but I'm still very interested in something in a nice talk format, for example. The day of the Screamin' Top 40 DJ has come and gone. I don't think people are as enchanted by radio as perhaps they were in my generation, because there was so little technology back then. Radio was pretty much all you had when I was growing up. You know, you had radio, you had television, but at the same time, there was nothing on TV other than news, weather, and sports, and variety shows. Whereas radio offered you the complete panoply of artists and formats and styles, but basically in less amounts of radio stations. So I think back in those days, there was more enchantment, more excitement, more of an aura about what was coming out of the radio. Whereas today, there's so much out there. I mean, for example, I'm basically a Sirius XM listener. That's what I listen to in the car constantly. And I'm listening for, if I want to hear a half hour of 70s on 7, I'm there. I'm not listening for DJs anymore. And to be honest with you, there's many fine people that work on the radio still. But radio's just changed so much that it's become so business-oriented that it's basically time and temp. And that's what they want. That's what you give them. You're paid for it, sometimes not as well as you should be, not as well as you used to be. But I think perhaps there's less interest in today's generation to want to be on the radio because it doesn't hold the same mystique that it used to.
And so you blame that on the proprietors, on the people that own these radio stations?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that, and again, this is not necessarily a diss at them. The business model has changed completely.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the word business is very important. And in a business environment, you've got to do what befits the bottom line. You've got to keep boards of directors and shareholders happy. And if that means, you know, cutting jobs or cutting corners, then so be it. I mean, any business has to operate that way. I'm not going to piss on the industry, because even though there's a few things I don't like about it, it's natural that business has to evolve. And the radio business, after all, is a business. So the state of it now isn't as pleasant, perhaps, as I would like it to be, and it's certainly not something I would aspire to want to be in if I were a kid today,
yeah.
because it's not as enchanting as it was. But having said that, I understand that things change. They need to. And, you know, I've been one of the changes. I was ushered out the door about a year and a half ago from Bell Media. And as displeased as I was, I understand it. Mm-hmm. I get it. And you know what? I was well compensated for it. It pissed me off. But at the end of the day, I understand it. So, and I bear no grudge. I still do programming on Bell Radio. And, yeah. and so it's just a sad reality that the business model has changed dramatically.
So do you miss it, though? Do you miss being in, behind a microphone?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. I do. I miss certain situations. I miss, you know, we were talking prior about when I was working at 1410, when it was called Talk 1410.
Yeah.
And I was hosting with Jennifer Thompson. We did the Jen and Joe show through a variety of formats and a variety of time slots and a variety of various incarnations of it. But, you know, when that ended, and still to this day, I will have people refer to the Jen and Joe show. And, you know, Jen and I get together quite frequently, and, mm-hmm. and we reminisce, and we always say, oh, man, it would be so cool if there was an opportunity again. I can't see it happening because of the current landscape of radio in this town. But I miss that. Absolutely, yeah. I miss that.
Yeah, I don't listen to radio very much. I end up listening to clips, say, online or podcasting it
right.
Because my hours are just screwed up. But I did listen to that Jen and Joe show a number of times, and I just enjoyed the chemistry between the two of you. I mean, she's a great broadcaster on her own,
yeah.
and she, you know, you can still hear her in the city. But the two of you together, where does that kind of chemistry? Because you've had partners on the air before.
I've had other partners on the air before. In fact, one time, a girl that I was not only dating but living with. So off air, we had great chemistry. On air together, we were horrible, and I couldn't rationalize that. Why is it I can love this girl, I can love her company, I can love being with her, put her together on the radio with me, and we're horrible? So when I found someone like a Jennifer Thompson, even though you know I'd known Jen prior, and we had a great kind of kidding relationship, but putting us together for some reason, I think she brought out qualities in me I didn't know existed, and I think I brought out qualities in her she didn't know existed. I mean, don't get me wrong. We had our scream fest.
Yeah.
There were times when there was much turbulence in the room between guests, and when those times were gone, we just had the best of times. I loved working with her and would love to have the chance again.
So that was an afternoon drive show, right?
What happened was we got a call from Stu Ferguson, who was a guy that has played a prominent part in my life for many, many years, and I owe so much to. Stu called me up when the axe fell at City TV. And they basically killed off the newsroom, and mm-hmm. I was out of work. So Stu called me up, and he said, hey, would you be interested in filling in on 1410 to do some talk stuff? And somehow either he suggested Jen Thompson or I suggested Jen Thompson. We went in. He said, look, I need to fill in the afternoon show for a couple of days until I find someone. Can you guys do it? So we did it, and after the first show, he called us in. He said, you guys work pretty well together. He goes, can you do, like, next week as well? So we said, yeah, we're not doing anything else. Why not? So we did next week. And at the end of the second week, when we were primarily only supposed to do 2 or 3 days, he said, I'm not going to lie to you. He goes, I think you guys really have something here. The audience is responding well. You sound dramatically different than, because they had all those horseshit doctor advice shows on 1410 at the time.
Dr. Laura.
Dr. Laura and Dr. Joy Brown and Dr. This and Dr. That. So we were the anti-doctor show. And we followed Dr. Laura, and we would fly in the face of all the horseshit that Dr. Laura was dishing out. We'd be contrary to that. And I think the audience responded. Like, there were Dr. Laura fans that hated our guts.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there were Dr. Laura fans that thought she was just some pompous ass that needed to, you know, be kicked down a notch or two. But Stu really liked what we did and basically said, yeah, bear with me on this. I don't really have a budget right now. He goes, I'll continue to pay you guys, but bear with me because I want to hire you. And sure enough, he did. So what happened was basically a 3-day experiment turned into a 4-year job together. And then Jen got let go because of budget cuts. They went down to single host shows. And I soon realized how much I was not good without a co-host. And my producer then was a guy named Art Factora.
Oh, I know Art.
Yeah. Art's a great guy.
Yeah.
And a very, very funny guy.
Yeah,
and,
great comedian,
and
yeah.
I relied heavily on Art. So even though he was uncredited, it was the Joe Leary show. It was really the Joe Leary show with a hell of a lot of help from Art Factora.
Yeah. And so you would have him on the air?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a funny guy. I mean, I'm not. I can get laughs with this guy. I'm going to use him, absolutely. Yeah. And he brought a lot to the show.
Where did that start, putting the producers on the air? Was that Imus?
Well, I don't know where it started initially because I think in a lot of cases, if you're a prominent host and you've got a full phone board, in a talk format I'm talking about, you know, you really don't need to rely on another body. But let's not kid ourselves here. There were some really down times at 1410. There were times when You know, the subject matter was horrible. The guest lineup was basically, you know, unexciting. The interest level from the listeners was zero. So if all of a sudden I'm opening up a topic and I don't see a light blinking, I'm going, well, what am I going to do? I can only stretch for so long. So I think a lot of times people use producers as a crutch. I'm not going to deny, I certainly used our producer, Art, as a crutch. But it was a good crutch, and it paid off. And I think without him, without having him available to me, if I just had some automaton that was like literally hitting spots and stuff, I would have stunk a long time ago.
So you also did morning radio, I understand.
Yes.
And that was where?
I did mornings at CHRX, which was AM 600. It was a classic rock format.
Was this when Pattison owned it?
That when Pattison owned it, still does. Yeah. Still owns the building that I worked out of, which is on West 8th. It was an interesting time because, again, here was an AM radio station playing album rock. And I remember our first book, we took a serious bite out of the Fox. And so it was kind of hard to imagine this AM radio station at 600 on the dial going from talk to rock and seriously taking a chunk out of the Fox.
Yeah.
So what happened was we had a morning show. Tom Lucas was our original morning man. And they made a change shortly thereafter. Tom moved on. And I was working in the afternoons with a traffic girl named Rochelle Dentry, who was called The Rocket. And we had a pretty good rapport as well, a very good rapport, in fact, and they were really digging what we were doing, so they decided to throw us into mornings. So that was my first taste of mornings, my first taste of making some seriously good dough, and I realized that mornings is where it's at in terms of on the you can have a lot of fun in other time slots, but if you want to create excitement, if you want to get some good contests and promotions going, if you want to take free trips, take listeners somewhere, it's likely your morning show that's going to generate that. So it was fun.
Even listening to the morning radio today, whatever one listens, even if you listen to the CBC, as I do from time to time, it's exciting. There's something about the morning that you can't get any other time of day.
Well, not only that, but I think you literally have a captive audience. Because driving to and from anywhere at that time of day, you rely on radio to most of you. I don't think people are just cranking the tunes at full blast. I think they're listening for traffic, weather information, what happened the night before, maybe their favorite morning host's take on a topical issue of the day. So I think morning radio is really must-listen radio.
And so doing these drive shows as you did over the years, was this your favorite time in your career?
I would say yes, but with a codicil. I would say that the favorite time in my career was early on.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, and it was CKDA in Victoria, 1220 on the dial, and it was a 50,000-watt top 40 radio station that boomed into Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our program director, Bob Morris, didn't want to ruin the mystique about the fact that if it's booming into Vancouver, someone might listen on the dial and go, oh, that's coming from Victoria. I'm not going to listen to Victoria radio. So we wouldn't refer to Victoria. We called it Capital City. And to be anonymous, to be given a new name, to be a screaming top 40 DJ, playing top 40 music of the 70s, that was the fun time of my life because it was so new and it was what I envisioned just, you know, all my life. But more recently, this was like, you know, 2 years after graduation. So, playing the music that I desired to play in a format I really, really wanted to work, my first go at it, have phone lines lit up, young girls requesting songs, wanting to flirt with the DJ. Yeah, that was fun. I mean, it didn't pay the bills a lot, but I didn't care about the money.
Yeah.
Later on in life, doing drive radio, doing the talk format, that was a lot of fun, but in a completely different arena of fun.
Yeah. And so you're a Vancouver boy,
born and raised.
Yeah. So how did you end up on the island?
I was working in Courtenay. I started in Courtenay, and CKDA was on the island, and it was the closest place to go, and I remember going down to Victoria. I just basically got an appointment with Bob Morris, the program director. And I lied about my age. I lied about my age and I lied about my experience. And for some reason, him and the office secretary named Bunny Reed decided that they were going upstairs for a beer. And Bob said, before you go back on the road, you want to come and have a beer? And I said, sure. And I thought, great, to hang out with the program director? Yeah. So in the course of conversation, at one point, he gets up and leaves the table. And Bunny says to me, she goes, you know he knows that you're lying. He knows that you're not as experienced as you claim to be. And I said, oh, shit. She goes, but you know what? I think he likes you. So stay in touch. So I left that day thinking, I'm blown it. You know, I've basically been caught in a lie, which is not a good thing when you're interviewing for a job. We all perhaps exaggerate our experience a little bit, but you do it in a reasonable way. I think I added like 2 or 3 years onto my career, at which point was like about a month old. And I remember one day out of the blue, about 2 weeks later, literally, Bob called me. He said, look, kid, I got some weekend. Before he could even get, done. Yeah. Didn't even ask about the money. Literally quit on the spot, pissed off the program director. He's screaming at me saying, I've made a mistake. You'll be blackballed in this town. He goes, you'll be blackballed in this business. And before your car gets to Victoria, he goes, I can make a phone call and I can ruin your career. And I'm thinking, screw you, whatever. And I get down to Victoria, and there's Bob, and Bob's paying me like $750 a month to do Saturday and Sunday evenings. I couldn't, the money wasn't even secondary, it was tertiary.
Yeah.
If even that, I just couldn't care less. Somehow I get by, I could always hit up mom and dad if I needed to. I just wanted to be on the radio and in a top 40 environment. So that was something that I just did because I started off in a very small town making crap money and just listening to the Victoria station and just wanting to be a part of it. So I wasn't going by the old rationale from broadcast school. Spend a couple years in small market, then spend 5 to 7 years in medium market, then you're ready for the bigs. I'm going, screw that. If I can cut corners here, why not? Yeah. And I did cut corners, but it worked to my advantage, at least early on. Perhaps down the road, maybe I didn't look at the bigger picture and think maybe I should spend more time per station, maybe work my way up the corporate ladder, if you will. But in those days, I just wanted to be on the radio.
So you come back to Vancouver. What was the first big gig for you?
The first big gig for me when I came back to Vancouver was CKLG, LG 73. Mm-hmm. And I got hired for LG by the program director listening to me in Victoria. So that's what kind of put me on, or made me realize that the radio station in Victoria was kind of on the same map as the bigs in Vancouver. Again, he didn't, cull me from the ranks. He didn't phone me randomly. I had basically sent a tape, and he heard the tape, listened to me on the radio, because he could hear how I would actually work, as opposed to just an edited version of me, and said, yeah, come on over, I've got a gig for you.
And that has, that radio station, that dial, that frequency, right. has a storied history in this town.
Yes, it does.
I mean, that's the photo on your Twitter, I think, your Twitter handle.
That is, yeah. LG73, you're right. Yeah.
So that was all music, was it? I mean, this is before my time. Sorry.
It was, it had what's called 2020 news, which was like minute updates at 22 and 20 past the hour. Top hour shotgun jingles. We had, the morning show was a little bit different because there was more interaction with the news guy and interaction between, Doc Harris, who was our morning man at the time. Frank Thompson was the news guy. Ted Farr was doing sports. But other than that, it was just screaming jingles and top 40 music. And that was all that they wanted to offer. And that's all that people listened for.
And a lot of people remember that station, and at the time, of course, listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
How was it in the ratings? I mean, was NW's number one all the time?
Oh, yeah, NW was. But NW was this monster. And, it was never a fight for number one in Vancouver radio back then. It was, just be happy to be neck and neck with CFUN, between CFUN and CKLJ, be neck and neck. And we generally were. Or, they would top us slightly, we would top them slightly, whatever the case may be. But, NW was just in a league all its own.
So what do you make of broadcasting today? I mean, people aren't listening to radio as they once did, say, in your time,
right,
when you were in morning radio. But it's still a competitive market. I mean, you're saying that the contests on the radio shows now, sort of the ratings things that people do at these various stations, even the CBC, get into it. So what the business has changed, hasn't it? And it's something that you're keenly aware of.
Well, absolutely. And let's speak of one of our mutual friends, Frosty Forrest. The last great entertainer to grace the Vancouver airwaves. There are no showmen like that anymore. There are some great personalities. There's people. Kid Carson does a solid job. I like his team. Johnny Holly and Neera at the beat are good at what they do. But again, it's just a different style of radio than the days of the Frosty Forrest and the real Roy Hennessy's and people like that. Again, I think it's inevitable that change was due. I'm not saying necessary, but due. And perhaps in a future generation, maybe there will be another Brian Forrest that emerges. Maybe radio will go through another cycle and decide, let's get back to more of a personality-oriented business. You talk to a Red Robinson, he can tell you all about it. There's just no great entertainers anymore. There's good people, there's solid people, there's some fun shows, But I just don't think there's any true showmanship in terms of what there used to be.
Do you think radio can be relevant still?
It's the most immediate. Yeah. It certainly is. I mean, again, there's nothing that you can't do on a handheld device today. So even if you're not driving around in a car, I remember, you know, this to show you the immediacy of it. I remember back in 68 as a kid driving around with my parents, and my dad actually pulled the car over to listen to Neil Armstrong walking on the moon.
Wow.
And he's basically, and I'm trying to comprehend the significance of this, the fact that I'm listening to some guy actually stepping foot on the moon. But the only method you had to do that, if you weren't at home watching the TV, was to be around a radio.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas today, I mean, you know, you could download it later. You could see it immediately. You get a Twitter alert. You could see something on one of the social media sites. So will radio be relevant again? It can be, but it was inevitable that it was going to be bumped aside to some degree.
But, I mean, there has been a bit of a renaissance with regards to radio. I mean, you look at that, I haven't listened to it, but the Serial podcast. I mean, that was a huge hit this past year. People are interested in sort of that sort of form of radio,
But the difference being is that doesn't necessarily have to be immediate. That can be radio after the fact. I'm not saying there's not good stuff offered. There's tons of it, but the immediacy of radio doesn't have the same impact that it used to. Again, if you're in your car listening to radio, and hopefully the shift is staffed by a live person, mm-hmm. which is less and less likely now. But if something breaks in the world, yeah, I mean, look at News 1130 and places that offer breaking news, CNN on television, you know, those kinds of services. If there's an immediacy there for sure, but there's, as I said, you can also be walking around downtown and feel an alert go off on your phone and see a TMZ breaking news that so-and-so has died. So mm-hmm. radio has much more competition now.
What do you make of the media landscape in Vancouver itself? I mean, you've covered it over the years
mm-hmm.
for the province, all those years that you wrote that column in
right.
the province. Because, and I ask this because as a consumer of media, as a fan of say, media people and the shows that they do, how do you think it's evolved over the years? And is it, it is sort of a close-knit crowd, isn't it?
I would say so, and the thing that's probably makes it more close-knit is that a couple of companies own a number of radio stations. So if, you know, back in the day when CFOX and Rock 101 were fierce competitors and they hated each other's guts, well, they're now owned by the same corporation, and you're in the same building, you're down the hallway from each other. So even though there's still some competitiveness between the two, at the end of the day, you're all on the same payroll. And if, you know, there isn't work for you on the Fox and all of a sudden you can do a shift on Rock 101, you're going to take it. So there's much more probably camaraderie and less real out-and-out competition mm-hmm. amongst. And the other thing that's important to remember, as somebody taught me years ago, is that Vancouver is not a very transient market. You come here, look at on the day like today. I mean, we're in mid to late February and it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can take into consideration cost of living aside, the scenery, the ambience, the atmosphere in Vancouver, it's a pretty appealing draw. So if you're here, you're making okay money, your job is reasonably secure, you're not necessarily, there's not much else you're going to go to. Toronto is a bigger market, no question. It's a more prestigious radio market. But is Toronto a more prestigious draw than Vancouver? So I think a lot of people come here and they don't leave here. And as a result, you end up bouncing around from the dial. I think there's three frequencies in Vancouver that I have not worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say worked on, I don't mean for any necessarily length of time, but just having done something on, you know, on a frequency. I think that's pretty unusual in other markets. I don't think you could make the same claim if you were working in Toronto where you've literally been on 12 or 13 different stations. I think from Toronto, you're either going to the States or you're heading out to Vancouver and making tracks here.
The other thing in reading up on you and seeing these various things you've done throughout your career is that you're very versatile. And I guess that's a skill that one needs if you're going to survive in this market, in this business especially.
I think you're right. I would say that I'm versatile out of necessity, and I mean this very sincerely. I don't believe that there's anything I do extremely well. I believe that there's a number of things I do pretty good. And as far as I'm concerned, and I've said this as well, let's say whatever your token target earnings are, let's take a figure. Let's say you want to make $100,000. That's what you want to make per year. Well, you can find one job that pays $100, or you can find 10 jobs that pay $10. And it all adds up to the same thing. Yeah. In my situation, I'm not going to be making the big tickets. I know that. But if I can make so much at this, and I can make a little bit at this, and a little bit at that, it all adds up to the same bottom line. So in order for me to do what I do and survive, I need to do a variety of things. If there was one thing in my arsenal that was I was amazing at, then probably that's all I would have done. But that wasn't in the cards for me, and I knew that early on.
Yeah. And so you ended up on television, and we're going back where we started. And that's where I first saw you on TV doing the weather.
Right.
It was you and Mark Dreesen, right?
Mark Dreesen. Mark was the full-time weather guy, and they decided to create a weekend newscast. This is a funny story, actually. They decided to go 7 days a week.
Yeah.
So they needed a weather person. And through an unfortunate series of circumstances, I got to know one of the reporters at UTV.
UTV, yeah.
And she goes, look, I don't know if you're interested. She goes, but there's a bunch of radio people coming through here auditioning for a weather job. We're going to 7 days a week. There's going to be a weekend weather opening. And I don't know if you're interested, but you might want to throw your hat in the ring. And I thought, yeah, okay. I did. So.
And you hadn't done weather before.
I'd not done weather. I'd not been on TV before.
Yeah.
So I went down and booked an audition, and it was Tamara Stanners, who's now at the Peak. Tamara Stanners is, without question, one of the, if not the sweetest woman you'll ever meet in broadcasting. There is no one that can't like Tamara, and if you don't like Tamara, you got a problem. There's something wrong with you. It's just that simple. So I do an audition with Tamara, and she couldn't have been sweeter, and they wanted to see us together just to kind of see how it works and how we look with each other. And I walked out of there going, oh, that was tremendous. I got a really, really good vibe. They called me back in for a second audition. And it was with Suzette Myers, who then went on to Global TV. And Suzette, who I ended up working with, was a great person, but I just caught her on a bad day. She was stressed. She was working solo. There was no co-anchor that night. She wasn't expecting to be auditioning. No one had told her about it. So I came in for a second audition, and it wasn't good. It was awkward. It was uncomfortable. And I'm driving away going, well, you know, however good it was with Tamara, it's not going to happen. I blew it. It's not going to work. And a buddy of mine, Greg Douglas, who's been a good friend for years.
Dr. Sport.
Dr. Sport. And Dr. Sport said, hey, you know what? I know Sandy, the makeup lady at the TV station. She goes, and he goes, and makeup ladies know everything. They get all the gossip. He goes, let me call Sandy just to see, you know, if there's any word about you in the building. So he calls her, and she says, yeah. She goes, they've shortlisted. There's three people that it's down to. And he goes, would you mind telling me who they are? So I'm sitting with him as he's phoning her, and he goes, okay, thanks, Sandy, bye. Hangs up the phone, and he goes, you're in. You're one of them. I go, okay, that's great. I go, do you know who the other two are? He goes, yeah, Stu Jeffries and Scott Barrett. And Stu Jeffries had, from his many years of good rocking tonight, and still a very, very prominent player in radio in Toronto, and talented as hell. Stu's a really, really solid entertainer. Scott Barrett has personality plus. Scott was doing Mr. Mike's commercials at the time. Scott is a great public speaker, hilarious guy. I'm thinking, I don't have a chance. I'm up against TV veteran like Stu Jeffries and a darn close second in Scott Barrett, who's equally as charming and as talented. And then there's me, some guy that's never been on TV before. So I was absolutely stunned when I got the gig. It was again, you know, you said the moment in your life. I didn't grow up wanting to be on TV. It hadn't even crossed my mind until the day that reporter called me to say, hey, just so you know, there's a bunch of radio dudes walking through here. I'd never, ever aspired to want to be on television, and certainly not doing weather. If anything, I wanted to be Dick Clark. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly didn't want to be doing weather. But along it came, and it was a very, very fun 13 years.
And that was the time when Channel 13 was really, the resources were going into it to go up against BCTV or Global, whatever it was. It wasn't Global, it was BCTV at the time.
It was BCTV at the
and,
time.
And came very close at some points, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it came close. But again, much like, you know, NW has always been on the top of the heap, in terms of TV, it's always been what's now Global. They've always led the way. So it's kind of a fight for second. Now, I think that's changing to somewhat now. You know, their numbers aren't as substantial as they used to be. I know CTV is making incredible inroads. But back when I was at then UTV to CKVU to Global to City, there was a serious attempt made when George Froelich was the news director.
Right.
And George is a serious news guy. and was doing a pretty damn good job. I think eventually resources just kind of got trimmed.
Yeah.
And it went from some ownership changes, too. And I think whenever that happens, every new owner sort of takes a look and goes, eh, you know, let's cut here and cut there. But for a while, yeah, we were making a pretty – I mean, I thought we looked way hipper than what was on BCTV at the time.
You had Russ and Suzette.
We had Russ and Suzette, and they had Tony Parsons. And, yeah, I mean, Tony's a great broadcaster. But we just kind of thought that, you know, let's do the anti-BCTV newscast. Let's look hip. Let's stand up.
Yeah.
You know, it was news behind the scenes, not behind a desk. That was one of our slogans. And you could see the traffic whizzing by in the back scenes and stuff. So we were trying to do something different. Whether we were successful or not, we thought we were.
Yeah. You've interviewed nearly everyone, it seems.
Right. A lot.
Yeah. You've interviewed someone that I've always wanted to interview. Don Rickles.
You know, and I've met Don a couple of times through the process, but again, these are not going to give, you know, I don't have any exclusivity to Don Rickles. Don's played the River Rock Casino many times, and I've been welcomed out there, and so interviewing Don Rickles was actually a struggle because it's one of those situations where you're not going to out-funny Don.
Yeah.
Don't even try.
Yeah.
Don't even try. But at the same time, you want Don to be funny. So you kind of want to try and throw something at him that's going to generate a response. Don was probably one of the least funny interviews I've ever done because I got a very serious Don Rickles. And I think perhaps, you know, when you see him on Kimmel and you see him on Letterman, there's comic performing Don.
Yeah.
I think when Joe Average, like myself, has an interview with him, you get the insight of Don Rickles.
Yeah.
But it was intimidating at first, but I soon realized that I'm not going to be intimidated because he's given me a very, very introspective answers to my questions. So there was no point in trying to bring some silly out in him because it wasn't going to happen. I got more silly out of Tim Conway. There was an interview that, and again, I didn't expect it, but every answer was a smart-ass answer. But it was funny. It was hilarious. But, you know, you're trying to get some serious questions his way and realize early on that's not the game he plays. So, okay, fine. I'll lighten it up.
Well, what are when you meet people like Don Rickles, Tim Conway, and these other, I mean, we read you in the 24 Hours, you're meeting artists all the time. What do you think you bring to an interview that's useful for you, that you feel at the end of it was a good interview?
Well, I think what I bring is a modicum of knowledge, and I mean that sincerely. I don't pour over pages and pages and pages of research. I need to have some degree of interest in the subject to begin with. So if I was to be hired as a staff interviewer and told to go interview some physicist about something in a genre that I cannot relate to, I would suck at it. I think what I do is I go after subjects or I'm interviewing in areas that are of tremendous interest to me. So with a modicum of knowledge, enough to know perhaps where the person is from, a little bit of their career highlights, or even in the case of a brand new emerging band that has just literally come out with a record, and there's only limited information available, I think what you do is if you're interested in the genre, I think you strike up a rapport. And I've found that most times, virtually everything I've done, without question, has been, I don't take any printed material with me, other than if I'm interviewing a band, I might take the album jacket because I want to get it signed.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. But there's limited information on CD casings as there like there used to be. So I go in there armed with a modicum of knowledge, a great interest in the subject, and hopefully if the person are decent, then we can strike a rapport, and it's just basically a couple of people having a good conversation.
What strikes me in talking to you today and meeting you for the first time as I have, and viewing your career as I have, is that you remain, I mean, and you're a guy who's had a number of axes swung at him over the years from various...
I've been chopped a few times,
Is that you retain this great enthusiasm for the business and for whatever you're doing at the time. I mean, Tim Russert used to say, you know, if you agree to do something, show that you're enthusiastic, that you want to be there, I guess. And in whatever job you're doing, you seem to have that. And so where does that come from? Is that something that I mean, it's obviously served you well over the years.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, I've been gassed, I think, five or six times, possibly six. And each one hurts. Each one you can bounce back from. Earlier on, they're easier to bounce back from. The older you get, as you know, it's more difficult. There's less demand for people as they age. But I've always had this unbridled passion for the business. And even if I can't do it on my terms, even if I don't have that ideal job, even if it's not available to me anymore, I still care about the industry because it's served me well. At times it's pissed me the hell off, but other times it's benefited me greatly. And I just love the variety and the nature of what the media entails, be it in a printed format, in a podcast format as we're doing, be it as a talk format, or you know, even planning spinning a few tunes on Rock 101 or something. I still enjoy the nature of it. It's just it's evolved and changed tremendously, but it's been in my blood. I mean, you go back to my high school yearbook, and in my graduating year, it said I wanted to be a radio announcer. And I remember, I think it was the 5-year reunion. Within 5 years of graduation, I was working at LG 73, and it was a big time radio station. And I remember going there, and there were people that a couple had become doctors, or at least in medical mm-hmm. school. There was an attorney. No, it was, I think it was a 10-year reunion. Pardon mm-hmm. me, 10-year reunion. So there was a couple of doctors. There were some very, very successful people, and I had the long locks, and I was, you know, with the t-shirts going. So I dressed up a little bit, but it was funny to get people's reactions because these were people like myself that were listening to the radio station that I was now working on when we were in high school. So, and it was a big deal to them, even though they didn't want to pursue it. They knew, hey, you're on the radio. I was considered successful.
Yeah.
But it was all I wanted to do. And if you look through other people's yearbook. In their graduating plans, post-graduation plans, you know, anybody that said law probably wasn't. Anybody that didn't say law probably was. But I was basically heralded as being successful because I stuck to what I want. And I knew, didn't take my grade 12 year to know that. I could have told you that in grade 8. I could have told you that in grade 6. I could have probably told you that in grade 4, that I wanted to be a radio announcer. And that's what I became. And that term announcer, at least, was generic enough. I didn't say I wanted to be a DJ. I wanted mm-hmm. to be a radio announcer. Because I think it gives you a little bit more scope in terms of it's a broader base. A DJ basically means you're spinning tunes. An announcer means, be that the show intros or hosting a beer show or whatever, at least it gives you that broad landscape to work with.
Finally, Joe. I listened to a bit of the Just Here for the Beer show.
Yes.
And it's compelling listening to, even though I don't drink beer. Okay. And I don't get this fascination that people have with beer, especially in this town.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obscene sometimes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so why beer?
Well, I'll tell you why beer, because being Irish, it's the curse of my people. I love the product. And again, this started, I was supposed to be beer and barbecue, and this was when I was working at 1410, I was talking with Stu Ferguson, and as they say, I can't credit Stu enough, and I probably said nasty things when I was working with him, and we had some adversarial moments, but at the end of the day, I owe so much to Stu Ferguson, I really, really do. Stu and I were having a conversation, and we were thinking of perhaps ways we could find some paid programming to generate additional revenue. So I knew this guy named Colin Jack, who had a company called Just Here for the Beer.
Mm-hmm.
Colin was a great guy. So we decided, let's maybe see if we can do beer and barbecue. We went and tried to approach a few people. We found out barbecue money had already been committed. There's barbecue season, but the money is committed for barbecue season well in advance mm-hmm. of barbecue season. So we missed that. So rather than wait a year, we just thought, well, let's do a beer show. So Colin was game. We booked ourselves some airtime, and we started the show up. And it went. It was a way for me to marry a couple of things I enjoy. Talking on the radio, drinking, and making money. What's not to like? The only difference being is that we have to pay for the airtime,
mm-hmm.
but we sell the airtime then to sponsors. And as you mentioned, Joe, and I'm not gonna knock any of these good people that support our show, the industry has evolved. I mean, in the craft beer industry, there's supposed to be 19 breweries opening in 2015.
Yeah.
There was something like 14 that opened last year. And those that are in the know, of which there seem to be many, will tell you, don't think that we've seen the end. We haven't. There's lots more to come. They're springing up. Breweries are springing up all over the place.
Like marijuana dispensaries.
yeah, very much so. So, again, I think it's a potentially lucrative situation if done right. And we're looking to we've rejigged the show a little bit. We're broadcasting it on location now. So it gives us a little bit more leeway. And I agree with you. I mean, if you're not into beer, who cares? But there is some funny things that develop from any type of live-to-tape radio program, as which we've experienced. So, again, it's just an opportunity to marry a few of my loves, and so far, So good.
Yeah, it's a great show to listen to. I mean, you did it in a restaurant on commercial, I think, and
yes.
And just the background noise. I mean, that's just great listening to. And
well, thank you.
But as someone who doesn't drink beer, I just don't get it. You know.
You know what? I don't care. I was just here for the coffee, to be honest with you. Again, if there's an opportunity now, especially owning the airtime, if there's an opportunity, if you came to me tomorrow and said, "Hey, look, I got vacuum cleaners and I got a good budget. What about hosting a vacuum cleaner show? I'll pay you X number of dollars. Can you buy the airtime?" Hell yeah. We'll do a vacuum cleaner show. I don't care. I'm not saying that I'm that dispassionate. I'm not.
Yeah.
But bottom line is that I enjoy the opportunity to broadcast.
Yeah.
And if there's an opportunity to generate revenue, which is another area of my interest, why not marry the two?
And you just love talking to people.
I don't mind it at all. Enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, it's been fun. And I so appreciate you coming in to do this.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you.
I want to thank Mike Easton as well for the suggestion. The Twitter handle is @reallyjoeleary. And then, of course, the Just Here for the Beer show every final Saturday of the month at noon on TSN 1410 Radio. So I guess that's next later this week. And then you can, of course, read Joe at the 24 Hours paper. Joe Leary joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantum.